Hello, everyone, and welcome along to Northumberland FA podcast from the sidelines with myself, Gary Middleton. Special guest today, and to those of you who listen to from the sidelines, will be aware we've had Pete on quite regular. Pete Sturgis, FA coach developer. Hi, Pete, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm really well, Gary, and really looking forward to this morning.
Good, thanks, Pete. And we're going to look at one of the FA 6 capabilities. The one we're going to look at today is disguise. But Pete, just before we start, do you want to explain to everyone what you're up to at present? Because we have already mentioned that you are retired at the minute, but I'm not sure that is happening. So if you want to just explain to everyone.
Yeah, I think it's retired in inverted commas. I am busy, but it's a really nice busy because I was lucky enough when I left the FA almost a year to the day now, last year, I was still working on a couple of projects. And I know we're going to talk about the play phase a little bit later on, but it was really nice that the FA said to me, will you still work with us to get these projects over the line? So in a way, they were projects that I'd invested a lot of time in and I was really obviously passionate about. And so to be given the opportunity to work on them a little bit further, what was music to my ears really. So I'm getting a chance to have a little bit more free time, but also working on the projects that mean a lot to me.
Yeah, as you say, Pete, we'll touch on that play phase before we wrap up. But let's get stuck into this, and what the term disguise actually means in the football sense.
Yeah, you mentioned our 6 capabilities, Gary, and I think everybody needs 6 things. Is quite difficult to remember. Yeah. So if we say to your listeners that there's an acronym using 6 capital letters, so try to develop more skillful players. Talks about timing, technique, disguise, movement, scanning, and positioning. So it's a really easy way to remember it. Try to develop more skillful players. And I think once you've got the first letter of each one, it'll be easier for you to understand. But disguise for me, it's a really important one, but it's also one that's difficult to develop quickly. It almost has to emerge over time as players get more control over their bodies, more control over the ball, more control over the decisions that they make. So 2 things are required from me, in my opinion. The players need to be prepared to practice a lot, and the coaches need to be patient while this emerges. Because while it's being developed, there are going to be mistakes. There are going to be lots of times when it doesn't quite come off. But I think the returns, if we can manage it, are so much greater. And it's worth all the patience and the understanding and the praise that we give kids for trying it, even though it's not quite working.
Peter, how important is it for us to develop our players to use disguise within the game, the modern game that it is now?
I think the margins between winning and losing or being able to dominate your opponent or not, they're getting finer and finer. As everything improves, the level really does equal out. And so if you've got anything that can give you an edge, even if it's just for a split second or for a brief moment, I think that ability to disguise your intentions or to make your opponent think you're going to do something and then you've got the ability to change your mind at the last moment, I think they're the fine margins that we obviously want in our favour, not in our opponent's favour. And we can actually start that process off with our youngest players.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we recognise that we want players in all areas of the pitch that can use disguise, not just that creative part in the top third of the pitch, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to really iconic example of disguise when Johan Cruyff first did hit that turn that is just so well known. It's so widely seen as a really great example of everything we're talking about with disguise. That's in the business end of the pitch, and obviously we want our forward players to have that ability. But if you've got a midfielder who is able to do that no look pass, you know, when you think it's going to be a big switch to the other side of the pitch, and suddenly they're threading the ball through, taking two or three defenders out of the game. I think we need that as well. But also when you're looking at your defenders, if it's a 1v1 battle and I'm the defender, I can actually try to take control of the situation even though I haven't got the ball, because I can look to toe at the ball or to make a movement that I'm not really going for the ball, but I want the opponent or the attacker to think that I'm going to make a try for the ball. That will impact upon what their next decision is and what their next action is. So I think even defenders can begin to be cagey, to be tricky, and to be almost to disguise their intentions in order to gain control in those 1v1 situations. I remember being at an academy in London, and we were just exploring what this might look like. And it was literally a 5v5 game, and all the play, you could score in the normal way, but you could also gain extra points if you could trick your immediate opponent into thinking you were going to do something and then you did something else. And the most effective player in the game was a goalkeeper, because the ball would be rolled back to him and he'd feign to kick it long or to pick out somebody further up the field, and he'd just turn away and then play it short. And the attacker who was closing him down bought it every time. So there are examples across all areas of the pitch where disguise, deception, and that pretense is actually useful.
Yeah, some great examples there, Pete, of players in the different areas of the pitch that we need our players to use disguise to create more skillful players. But I think you mentioned at the start of around the six capabilities, we'll need to use some of them other capabilities to gain success with disguise, Pete.
Absolutely. I think I know I mentioned the Cruyff turn earlier. That is as much about the timing of when he does it as it is about, you know, how he uses his arms for extra disguise and deception, how his contact on the ball is just perfect so that he places it after the turn exactly where he wants it. So I think your timing, certainly your bodily movements, so physical literacy is really important. And then the ability to just place the ball exactly where you want it for your next action, having fooled or deceived the defender, is really important. And I think if people look at that Cruyff turn through that lens, they'll understand that it's not just a turn. It's when all of those capabilities begin to just all come together and the planets align, and it just works so effectively.
Pete, where would you put scanning into that around disguise?
I think scanning when you're on the ball is really important. And I think that no-look pass can be combined with scanning, because you're obviously looking where you may next place the ball. The defender can see that, and if you make that really obvious, they might think, right, I'm going to try to intercept this. I know where I think the player's going to play it, and then suddenly you've changed your mind. So I think sometimes you can scan to actually add to the deception, because it makes it look like you're going to do one thing, but then you'll actually do another.
Yeah, Pete, how do we design practices to develop our players with these core skills?
For me, I think if we reduce the numbers, and I know I'm a big advocate of smaller number formats and the learning that can be developed through them anyway, but I think smaller formats are great for two reasons. You can have a really clear focus and you're going to get lots and lots of repetitions because there's less players on the pitch and you're likely to be on the ball a lot more. So if it was about trying to score goals by tricking your opponent, you're going to get a lot more opportunities to try and do that in a 2v2 than you are in a 7v7. Mm. So I like small number practices for that. You can also, from a very young age, and this is where coaches of our youngest players have a really important job to do. In your practices, if players are encouraged to stop and start when they're on the ball, that is the beginning of disguise. Because if you're my immediate opponent, Gary, and I'm on the ball and I'm traveling with it, you have no idea when I'm going to stop and when I'm going to start again. So there'll always be a split second delay between me stopping with the ball, you stopping, but I've already then carried on. So there's always an advantage that I can gain. And I think if I was trying to introduce disguise for our youngest players, and certainly the coaches who work with them, stopping and starting in a 1v1 situation is a great place to begin, because you should always be able to gain an advantage.
Mm. Pete's really interesting looking into the core moves, and if we can develop our young players to understand these core moves, how important they are in the game, we'll be developing more better players and more skillful players.
Yeah, I think certainly in a 2v2, you're gonna get more opportunities. Whether it actually happens is in the lap of the gods. But you should get more opportunities for those little give and go moments, mm-hmm. Where I'm in the right place to send the ball to my partner and he or she's taken up exactly the right place to eliminate my immediate opponent with a 1-2 pass. The disguise comes when I'm using the outside of my foot or I'm using different parts of my foot to actually execute that 1-2 pass. Mm. But also you're going to get lots of examples where in a 2v2, my teammate might be making those little diagonal darts and for me, it's a straight pass into their path or vice versa, where it's a diagonal pass from me and it's a straight run from them. So once we start incorporating, noticing and encouraging these three types of core moves, you're going to introduce more possibilities to the players. Mm. And because the numbers are quite low, you're going to get high repetitions of the possibilities of them using those to take control in that 2v2 format. So I think we're opening up a whole new ball game, if you'll pardon the pun, to the young players, because those 2v2, 3v2 situations are present in every format, even the bigger ones. So we are actually practicing a really important part of the game, whatever format you play. Mm.
Yeah. So key messages, Pete, around that, how we're developing our players to use more disguise within their game would be putting them into smaller formats, smaller units, to get lots of repetition and opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing with our youngest players, particularly, because their decision making is still being refined and polished, they might see a pass and their body is ready to execute their pass. So everything's in place. And then suddenly the situation changes and there's either a player in the way or the pass is in danger of being intercepted. Our youngest players are not always in control of their decision making and their bodies in order to change their mind at the last minute. And this is where I ask the coaches to be really patient, mm-hmm. because they might go through with the pass, because they're not in a place yet where they can override it and then make another decision. It's just too much for where they are developmentally. But if we understand that as coaches, it's not a mistake. It's just that they're at that point where they're unable to change in the blink of an eye the decision and the action that they were going to perform. But that's quite a natural progression. So the more repetitions they get at that, the more they'll recognize, actually, this pass is in danger. So just be prepared to change your mind at the last minute. I think that's all part of the development that we can help the coaches understand and the practice and the players to practice without fear of failure.
Yeah, it's always really interesting to listen to your views. Let's quickly touch on the player fears, Pete, which is it's for the younger age group, the 4 to 6 year old. You've a roadshow around the country at present. How's the rollout gone?
Yeah, we've done 8 events around the country, up as far as Durham and as far down south as Surrey. And to be fair, from my point of view, I'm really pleased with the reception it's received. I've had the opportunity to work with some fabulous young people. And it's given me an opportunity to really communicate face to face what the play phase is all about. And it's about giving our children the most positive and memorable beginning to their journey into being active and to playing sports. I know our main sport is football, but if we get children interested in being active and playing sport, then whatever sport they choose, if they've had that great start, they're more likely to stick with it for the long term. And so it's got huge benefits for the nation, for the nation's health and well-being. So it's such an important program to communicate out to as many people as possible.
Yeah, great to hear, Pete. Great to hear. Pete, you've created your own platform, I believe, Coaching Resources. Do you want to explain to everyone listening in what that is and what that looks like?
Yeah, it's a really exciting project for two reasons. Partly because I get the chance to work with my daughter, Lauren, who's she's a professional actor, but she's also had years of experience in audio, recording, podcast development, podcast editing and directing. So it gives me a massive opportunity to spend some time with Lauren. And we really enjoy our company and really bounce off each other. So we're going to be doing some podcasts as part of this resource. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'll work with Lauren. Lauren's also developed the website, and at the moment there are over 100 practices that we've placed on there, because the one thing that we've found that coaches probably need more than ever are just some ideas. Mm-hmm. And I don't want that to detract from a coach developing their own ideas based on what their players need. But I think sometimes you just need an impetus or something that prods you into saying, well, here's an example. Try to get some ideas of your own from these examples. And it's really interesting that we've spoken about small number practices, because it's aimed at coaches working with in the foundation phase. And so there are lots of examples of small number or individual practices, pairs practices, futsal small number practices that you can add to your current repertoire, but always bearing in mind that the practice might need to be tweaked in order for your players and for you to, you know, extract the maximum from the ideas that we're presenting to you. So it's a really exciting project. We are probably a month away from its launch. So look out for it on social media. It's a bit, we've called it the Session Collective, because if coaches are, you know, in that magpie phase of collecting mm-hmm. as many ideas as possible before they develop their own approach and their own philosophy, then we want them to think, you know, session collective, yeah, let's look there first for some ideas. So it's a really exciting project, Gary. And I wanted to develop in similar to the way that we had the on the platform Hive, where we had literally thousands and thousands of coaches who were interested in the content, but we also want to create a forum where, you know, we can get coaches talking to each other about all of the things that are so important to us working with the foundation phase children.
Brilliant, Pete. That sounds amazing. Can't wait to see that come out. Pete, so we're looking May time, Pete, is it? May time or June?
Yes.
May time, yeah.
We've got some recording dates in for podcasts right up into the first week in May, and then we'll start sending them out.
Oh, fantastic. Great, Pete. And that brings us on to the next point around you're coming up to Northumberland on Wednesday, the 12th of June, to present an event face-to-face on creativity. What can everyone expect from the event?
Yeah, it's, I don't know whether it's going to be controversial, Gary, because it's as part of the there's a short like presentation with a little bit of, you know, information, or I don't want to call it theory because that sounds a bit dry and dull, but it's a little bit of information about, if you're interested in this area, what are the things that you can do, or some of the things you might need to do less of in order for creativity to emerge. So without giving too much away, the less we shout on to the players, the more we give the decision-making process over to the players. And so if we've given them a really broad technical toolbox, then they can use all of the tools in that toolbox to look for possible solutions to whatever is happening in the game. And that's where creativity does begin to start. But if we're grabbing the decision making from them all of the time, because we're constantly shouting on information, we're actually shutting down the opportunities for the players to be creative themselves. So if for me, that's not controversial, but for some coaches, it might be, I have to do this just to help my players through the game. And I understand it. But the coach also needs to understand that if they continue to do that, they're not going to get the kind of creative returns that we all want longer term. So it's having a balance between knowing when to shout some advice on, because it's really important that, you know, you do, and actually biting your tongue and saying, no, longer term returns are going to come from me just not saying as much or, you know, not grabbing all of the decision making from the players. So I'm hoping the coaches don't see it as controversial, but you know, I'm going to hit them over the head with it.
Well, Pete, we'll look forward to seeing you in Northumberland in June, in the summer, and once again, thanks very much for sharing your knowledge on from the sidelines today with us,
Gary. I've really enjoyed it, and I mean the areas that you've, or the questions that you've asked me, have really teed up some really important things for the foundation phase development. So I hope the coaches, you know, really try to get to grips with it themselves and really give our kids the best possible start in football. And I'm sure that we've got a growing number of coaches who are really buying into certainly your key messages as a county FA, but also mine as someone who's passionate about the development of our youngest players.
Amazing. Thanks very much, Pete.
Thanks, Gary.